All produce is grown using organic garden methods, and we offer weekly shares of produce from farms. Planet Forward's next season will begin the week of December 28, 2015. In a weekly share, you will receive 6 to 8 different varieties of freshly harvested vegetables grown using organic gardening methods. You can visit www.planetforward.org for more information. KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
You should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, greetings, and welcome to the post-party hangover edition of Technology Bites.
Ow, my ache and everything.
We finally got Barrett bailed out of jail, and... God,
I had my car towed twice. No, that was... I gotta say, that was an awesome party. I'm still... Still buzzing. Your mustache is still twirly.
Yeah, it was a good mustache night.
So,
good night in general.
So, for those of you who came out to the party last Saturday, we're really glad you did, and I hope you had a great time. For those of you that didn't come out, you really missed one.
Sad trombone.
You missed one for the ages.
It was.
You'll have to wait another 20 years.
I don't know when we'll have another confluence of greatness like that. It was the best weather, and great people, and food, and drink, and more great weather. It was just a very, very awesome time.
I think you meant confluence.
Confluence. Well, I think, if it wasn't for us, Cone would be out of business. We brought so much business to him that Saturday night. No, it was great fun, and I couldn't keep up with everything that was going on.
Yeah, well, if you didn't make it out, so we were up on the roof, so we were at our usual spot, but we changed the digs to go upstairs. So you kind of, you know, you walk up the stairs. Stairs kind of feel, you know, kind of scary, kind of sketchy. And you get up there, and there's singing fish, singing crabs.
Yeah, we had
art cars.
Art cars, a little bit of lighting. You're around the corner, and, you know, you couldn't quite see DJ Fail yet because he's kind of in the Fail Cave, kind of tucked around the way.
I kind of wanted him in the other corner, but he got into that corner.
You know. What goes in?
Yeah, I'm being asked for a password. I'm going to take some guesses. So, Jay. But yeah, I had a good time. I thought it was really cool. Lighting along the sides, it changed.
Well, you brought the lighting, and if it wasn't for the lighting, it would have just been this dark spot.
Geeks in a parking lot with no lights.
Yeah, come on up.
We're holding the party inside Darth Vader's helmet.
Yama, man, come here. So, DJ Fail did an awesome job. Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I mean, I didn't really know what was going on in the rest of the party most of the time.
Parts of the party that needed Flicked came to you.
That's
people.
That's kind of the way you do your business anyway.
That's true.
And Cones is not as conducive, but in the past, Flicked has kind of held court.
I'm passing the password to
Jay. You're only about three steps away from the food and the bar.
That was nice. Oh,
that
actually,
was a good move.
So the food was far away from me, and I was like, how can I get that food closer? And I said, hey, it's out there in the dark all by itself, and there's a light over here.
And it can't hear
we
the
should
music.
Bring. And so my justification was, hey, we can bring it over here. That way it's in the light so people can see what food they're getting.
Yes, that was smart. That was you, too. I think you thought of that.
Yeah.
That's because before it had the lights Barrett brought were the red hue lights.
They're red and blue.
They do a different... They cycle through their colors, and the ham on the table looks rather dodgy under the only that light. It's like it was sort of
We should have made that one green,
pink and glowing,
and then
well, you couldn't tell the difference between the ham and the turkey.
Loopy Low brought a Snickers salad or something, and Jamie brought the LED Jello shots. That was awesome.
With anode and cathode.
I don't know if you saw her post on Facebook, but because I was like, so did you come up with this? Did you steal it from somebody? And her claim, which I'm gonna believe her, was that she came up with her own. Like she was in a store and she saw a thing for, it was like, it wasn't cupcakes, but it was like a
cake mold
or chocolate mold or whatever. But
I thought it was a Jello mold.
No, it was a. She posted a picture of what the packaging looks like. It's for cakes or chocolate or something. Anyway, she saw it, and as soon as she saw it, she was like, those look like LEDs, and then that's when she thought of it. And but I guess she was under a bit of a time crunch, so she didn't get to really, like, realize her full idea, because what she actually originally planned was to have clear plastic discs on the bottom of them that the sticks went into, and actually have an LED under it so that they were all lit up.
Yeah, we probably had a lawsuit on that.
We're going to have to work on that, I think, before the next party comes around. We'll have to talk to Jamie and maybe
I was thinking like that,
winter.
Or even if you had them stuck into something where there was a light underneath them. So that
that's what I would think. A little CR, you know, 2032 battery, a little LED. And
see, that's what she wanted to do.
LED. Yeah.
It was thoughtful. There were a lot of people really brought stuff out and participated. It was really good fun.
She had her R2-D2 font. I keep calling it that because it annoys her. it's Aramesh or whatever.
Aramesh, yeah. There was Star Wars cake out.
And then her binary 20 cake, which I berated her for because it didn't have Roy G. Biv. It was missing and they weren't in order. And it wasn't like the lengths of the colors were like, you know, relative to the lengths of the wavelengths of light. Like there was
no
pattern to it. I refuse to believe that it was just random chaos that brought together this, you know, this scrolling work on the cake, but she didn't admit to anything.
Speaking of random chaos, we had videos, too. So we had a video stream going. We had the movie Hackers,
Tron.
For a while.
I played Hackers, and I played Tron, and then we had somebody else who brought Arise.
Arise.
See, that's what I was not aware of. Yeah. I thought that just showed up on its own.
It did because one of our a friend of mine, I want to say her name is Brandy, but I can't remember. But I hadn't seen her in forever, and she showed up out of nowhere for the party, and she said, hey, you know, if you don't mind, she pulled the Arise DVD out of her purse or her pack or whatever and said, can you play this? And I said, yeah, I sure can. So it was, there was the Subgenius tie-in.
You said,
was just
Bob Dobbs.
Bob to the yeah.
So we had a, you know, we had a kind of a multimedia experience going. I did bring some VHS tapes of the old TV show, but never got around to playing them because I was just having too much fun.
Well, plus all the effort it would have taken to hook all that up. And...
Well, flicked it in.
Shouldn't have been too bad. I had a DVD hooked up. I could have hooked up the VCR pretty easily.
Have been big deal, but
maybe we should get those transferred to DVD.
I need to
digitized.
Do that. Yeah, I need to. I didn't realize that I had two of them. And Barrett's got, there's some in another archive somewhere.
Two, I believe, yeah.
I don't think we need that many, ultimately.
Do them all.
Well, once they're digitized, then we can kind of make a best of, maybe, or...
But the music
and they
was,
can multiply, and there'd be billions of them out there.
The music was great. Flicked was having a good time DJing. He did a send-up to the Flying Fish Sailors, which I missed, sadly.
Oh, I forgot. I'm supposed to provide you with the playlist. I haven't done that yet.
The best parts, and you were gone for the first one, because I was wildly looking away around trying to find Jay Lee, but they played some of the early promos, and it was you doing, like, have you tried installing it? You know, all the Jay Lee-isms, which was awesome. You were around the second or third time you played it, but it was... That was neat.
Now, I heard some of the
it,
promos.
I thought that you were like talking to him.
It sounded just.
Chris, I've got a question. Where do I call in?
Yeah, I heard Flicked playing some of the old promos and stuff, and that was cool.
Yeah, those were awesome.
And I heard him play the theme song mixed in there and some of that stuff. So it wasn't just a random playlist set on shuffle. Flicked was put in force.
I curated it.
Masterminded.
Hopefully Loopy Low wasn't too upset about my selections.
Loopy Love seemed like he was having a good time. He did get to sit and talk sewing with Cynthia for a little while, so I think that helped out. And everybody was really nice to Cynthia, which I appreciate. She doesn't come out very often, but everybody treated her really nice, and she had a really good time. I think they...
People are going to be mean to Cynthia.
Yeah, really. She's...
Or creepy.
You know, if things go south on one of your foreign adventures, if you go to some more obscure place that, like, maybe Americans aren't as welcome... If you get separated, I'm not worried about Cynthia. She's probably going to be like the queen of that place eventually. You go down a dark alley, and I don't know that you'll come back. But she would land on her feet. And...
Oh, that's absolutely true. But I still thought it was important to say that people did. I think everybody was just really nice there, and it was a super chill. Barrett had thrown a party a long time ago up on the roof of the, I guess it was the Sabine Lofts. Or
no, it was... Capital Lofts.
And he had thrown a party up there called Simpatico. Mm-hmm. And he had decorated it really nice with some lights, and there were some, like, drapes and stuff. We didn't have the option to do that. But in my mind, the party that we were going to have up on a roof in Houston needed to be close to that. And I think we got kind of close.
Because the big issue we were facing was my rooftop, my old loft, was, like, an eighth the size of the size that we had up top. So it was just really hard to get a lot of people there to make it look
and
was really cool.
Hopefully probably
we had
more than two outlets.
Yeah, we had more than two outlets. Yeah.
I think you had like comfortable furnishings up there.
We had some cool stuff up there. The main thing was, we kind of controlled the space. We had a day or two to set up.
KD5 brought tables and chairs, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. We had plenty of places to sit. So it looked like we were doing it on purpose. It was just a very good night. And I'm sorry for anyone who missed it. I'm glad I didn't miss it.
There was dancing. Even Flicked danced. I did see that. I did not take video.
When did I dance?
You did.
You apparently danced to...
First rule of dance club.
I heard you dance to... You'll
wasn't
dance
it
to anything.
To, no.
You danced to Devo's...
Didn't you dance Yan-Cat. To Can't Get No Satisfaction?
I don't...
Maybe that wasn't dancing.
You went out in the light of the projector, and you were moving rhythmically while some music was playing.
What?
Maybe it was a fit of some sort.
Might have been a hologram.
It wasn't Depeche Mode, but
That was one of the last songs that I played, right?
Yeah, that was towards the very end.
Yeah.
Picking up cables and cleaning up his mess looked like dancing.
We did have one casualty.
You did?
I think Lee had too much fun. I think that's why he's not here. He's fun out.
Oh, right.
He's still hungover.
I thought he just realized it wasn't a fundraiser, and he was like, I'm not going to go to that.
Where's the pain?
I thought he would want to come out. Anyway, welcome to Technology Bites. So we spent the first 15 minutes talking about our party because it was awesome. It was 20 years. It was 20 years celebrated well. And
shirts.
Shirts went.
Y'all still have some shirts?
We still have some.
We had to add some. We added a little supplemental order because we sold out of the black shirts on the night, and so we got a few more.
Yeah. So we had plenty of shirts were sold previously. We had some for premiums as for the fundraiser, and we had to dip into the premiums to satisfy some needs at the thing. And Pete was able to get some more printed up. But if you want a shirt, contact us.
Yeah, use our Facebook page. I think it's probably easiest.
Jay's wearing a red one now, which looks pretty good too. I was a fan of the black ones, but the red one looks pretty good. If you look into your radio, you can see that it does look good in red.
The black ones, the contrast with the artwork is sort of the best, but it doesn't take away from the other colors.
No, I like all the colors. I think, you know, they're not a multicolor kind of guy.
I was surprised. The ones we're out of the sand colored shirts.
Amazing.
All of those are gone. Because that was the different one. That was the one that was different.
And since you asked, yes, we did sell some small and medium shirts. So you know, they weren't all
the
ones
for children, but some of them actually.
There was an adult who got a small. I remember.
Yes.
So, all right. So anyway, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. This is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
cool.
Lee is out tonight taking care of whatever it is that Lee's got to take. I think he's on a play date with Eric Berger.
They poached him away.
I tweeted to Lee. I said, "So how do you like your space journalist? Fried, scrambled, or poached?" So yeah, Eric, that's geek news there for you. The Houston Chronicle. After, I guess, 15 years that Eric Berger's been over there doing science at the Houston Chronicle, has taken a position over at Ars Technica. So he's left the Houston Chronicle and Craig Levati and Dwayne Silverman.
Since the Chronicle's the only paper in town, you couldn't get the cool headline, "Sci Guy Says Bye-Bye."
So is Craig Levati going to take over the science?
Science! Yeah, that could only go well. So, just as an aside, I don't know if anybody watches the hit Comedy Central television cartoon called South Park. But South Park has been knocking it out of the South Park with their latest run of episodes. They're really touching heavy on social media memes and stuff. And so this one of the recent episodes was everybody in South Park were becoming Yelp reviewers. And so it was a knock at Yelp reviewers and online comments and foodies and all of that. So everybody's going to restaurants and all the restaurants are living in fear of getting a bad Yelp review. And it really it didn't really slam Yelps. It slammed Yelp users really hard. And so some website, a parody website, put up a story saying that Yelp was suing South Park, and they have a website called cbs.com.co. And so it looked like CBS. So people are thinking, oh, it's legit. So everybody was posting that South Park is getting sued by Yelp, and somebody tweeted, they said, "Seriously?" And they linked to the story, and I said, "No, not seriously, sarcastically." And so Yelp yelped at me with a link to the Snopes article. Yelp is just digging all the free publicity.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So they're basically tweeting out the Snopes article about how they're not actually suing them and stuff. But
troll.
I got tweeted at by Yelp. I don't know how to feel about that.
Except it's Snopes with two E's.
Did they rate you?
Snopes, which is five stars. New site.
All right. So also another. I'm just taking up all the news. I'm doing the news tonight. So
Jaylee time.
Directly into your brain. No, it's Back to the Future Day.
Yes. How many people, by show of hands, have driven 88 miles per hour today?
I was on I-10, so well over.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I-10, yeah. How many people slow down to 88 miles per hour today on 10?
Yeah, really. When this car slows down to 88 miles per hour.
I'm curious, though. I want to know if there's, any way you can go and, query public records to see how many speeding tickets were in today for 88. If there were, because I'm sure some people went out there and tapped 88 at some point.
Well, the the best Facebook post was done by my friend Jamie Adams, and he said it's today seems different somehow. It should be any other day, but really, it's 26 years from now, 26 years ago. Yeah, it was a little obtuse, but I liked it.
I've traveled here.
Well, there's a lot of and our audience may be slightly lesser because of people going to see the marathons where they played all three movies today.
Yeah, that's going on. That's an international thing. I've got friends in Italy that are jazzing out over that and going to go see it over there. And
well, there's some place that does these big productions where you watch the movie outside.
Alamo.
And they actually perform they add things to, you know, they have live action things happening that match the movie. And no, I'm not talking about like Rocky Horror down in front of the screen. I'm talking like when they did Back to the Future.
Real Plutonium and
DeLorean. They had a DeLorean come through there, through in front of the screen at the moment when, and they sync it to the movie. So the DeLorean comes by.
I know there was a company in England that was doing that. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about. I know they did it with Star Wars. Everybody was freaking out because there was like Star Wars people that were excited about going on it.
That'd be really cool if Eric Stoltz was piloting the DeLorean.
Or even cooler if the guy who played Biff was beating the hell out of
him. You know what I didn't realize?
During the scene where he pushes him in the cafeteria.
I didn't know that Huey Lewis of Huey Lewis and the News actually had a cameo in the movie.
You're just too darn loud.
Yeah, and I don't know if I knew that at the time, but I certainly, if I did, I'd forgotten it until today.
I knew
so it's kind of cool. Really?
I
was fairly young. I knew who they were. I might have had a tape of theirs, but I don't know if I could have spotted them outside of a suit, you know, in the sunglasses and the horn section.
The Back to the Future writer said that Biff Tannen was based on Donald Trump.
Really?
It's according to the CBS.com.co, I guess. No, the Daily Beast said... So there's a specific analog between Biff Tannen, the bully and bad guy, in almost every timeline, Back to the Future, that they says, yeah, so Bob Gale said that he had based that on Trump.
When asked for comment, Donald Trump said, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
It's not probably appropriate to play on the radio. There's like maybe a couple of bad words dropped, but College Humor put out a video where the Doc and Marty more or less show up in modern day, like today, more or less, you know, October 21st, 2015.
I wanted that to be funny. I didn't think it
No, it wasn't funny, but it was kind of clever just because it just more or less made fun of, you know, like, hey, where's the flying car? Well, there aren't any flying cars. Well, can we travel here? No, we really can't because the Muslim state and the crackdown on TSAs and, you know, it's just whatever. But it's kind of true. It's like all that futuristic stuff that we thought we'd have, we really kind of don't.
Well, they didn't, except they didn't have the internet. They didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't notice that. You know, they didn't show people pirating Jaws 19 on their phone like we can today.
Now, are the Cubs still in contention? Could they still win? Like the prediction, or is that just like starting to go Snopes?
I know they were down 2-0. So I don't know recently.
But I thought the team that won was the...
2014.
I thought it was the like Florida or something. It was, which was sort of predictive too, because that didn't exist. There wasn't a team there.
No expansions yet.
The old man is like, you know, something about the Cubbies, but he said, you know,
well, the newspaper,
if he had been able to go back and bet on Florida for the World Series that year, he'd have made a fortune, and that's like set Marty on the whole buy the almanac thing.
Right, but there was the newspaper article that said Cubs win.
Yeah, way to go, Cubbies. Cubs win.
They're still in contention. Game four is coming up, it looks like.
So they must have won their third game because they were down
2-0.
Yeah.
Now, we kind of almost have that hoverboard, but that was almost kind of hoaxy because doesn't it require like a full metal floor and some electricity?
We did get a segue.
Yeah, or what are those little double footboards that are kind of out there that are very easily broken and people are falling off of on YouTube and Vine?
And Doc Brown couldn't come. If he would have looked a lot different if he came here and got plastic surgery to look younger. That would have been scary.
So but Nike did release the shoes today, the self-tying shoes.
Oh no!
Yeah, they did.
No, hold on.
No, they did. So in 2011 they made some, but they looked just like them, but they weren't self-tying. But today they released just like self-tying ones, and the first ones that they gave them to Michael J. Fox. He's actually got an Instagram video or something of him putting it on and it, you know, singeing on his foot.
Well, he was joking, you know, since he's got Parkinson's, he was joking that there was a video with he and Christopher Lloyd talking about the movie and about the future that it saw and all that, and he said, you know, he joked, you know, he could really use self-tying shoes now because, you know, it's difficult for him. And so then Nike gives him a pair. That's kind of cool.
I did want to say one last thing about the party. I want to thank Richard Carter for bringing out the Sashimi Tabernacle Choir. That's the name of the art car, by the way.
Yeah, that is really cool.
And it was really, everybody that came to the party really enjoyed seeing that car. And I was surprised how many people didn't know that car. That's like a mainstay of the art
That's
car.
That's a staple, community. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you do a search on Sashimi Tabernacle Choir, just fish, singing fish art car, you'll find videos and stuff about it.
However, getting to see it at night is kind of a special treat, so unless you go like to the Glorama thing. Yeah. There are a couple of, I guess, annual nighttime things.
There
but
are.
Most of the times I've just seen it in the day. This is the first time I think I've been up to it at night.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, and then the other movie thing that was big news, sort of geek big news this week, was the Star Wars trailer and sales of tickets.
Did you guys get tickets?
I didn't.
So I didn't know it happened until the day after, so I got okay tickets, but I got tickets.
I still haven't gotten. Wondered, does that mean it's going to be, is that the only way
seating?
To get it? Is that that's
I watched,
the first day
reserved
or something?
Seating? Where
the
at?
Ones I got are reserved.
I watched the trailer today.
I don't want to see anything.
I hadn't seen
I'm going
it before.
Dark until...
Supposedly, and I think this is a J.J. Abrams thing, which is smart. Supposedly, there's nothing in the trailer that's not in the first third of the movie. So he's not giving away anything that's in the, you know, there's no big
so he's
you
acknowledging,
final
plus
moment.
You,
he has
plus
smart
you
fans
really...
that might remember something, and you give this pivotal scene with who's alive and who's
well,
dead.
Gotta
that
know,
goes
yeah,
all the way through.
There's
no
already
good.
Plenty of articles that have taken that thing apart and looked at every
oh,
frame.
Yeah.
I watched it, and then I read one of those articles, and it's like, geez, I didn't see that. And they show you the still, and it was just something that, like, blinked by before something else happened.
Well, but the big discussion is the absence of Luke Skywalker from that and from the poster.
Although he's in, there's in the trailer. I think there's one scene with him that's
where
that must be
him,
a cloaked figure with a metal hand with an R2-D2 type. Mm-hmm.
But it looks like they're going to bring back another like Death Star type device and another Darth Vader type character.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, some of that I wouldn't want to.
Yeah.
Well, no, I wouldn't want to give away spoilers.
I hope
but basically that
the...
guy is like a big. He's like a follower. It's sort of like Darth
he's
Vader
like,
is a...
It's like a Web 2.0 kind of Darth Vader. Like, so he's not
he's
quite as evil as
him.
Darth Vader.
Like
he's copying him.
Or any of that. He's just... He just idolizes him and has collected stuff.
And he's apparently a major character.
They're like
in the movie.
Knights of Ren.
Yeah,
or
the
whatever.
Knights of Ren or something.
Like Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
Stimpy,
you idiot.
Behold the power of my fully charged red button.
Log.
All right, so we're kind of all over the place, but we're coming up in the bottom half of the first hour. Why don't we do the info shot?
Okay.
Or not.
I guess it would be on the right.
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So just in case you haven't had enough of Back to the Future Day, Apple, they get some serious geek cred for it. They updated Siri quietly with at least 10 humorous responses related to Back to the Future 2, the movie that was released in 1989. iPhone and iPad users can invoke Siri and say, Happy Back to the Future Day, to receive one of the responses at random. I wonder... I should have got
mine. J's on it, yeah.
Happy Back to the Future Day.
I hear Hill Valley, California, is the place to be this time of the century.
So there's a whole slew of random answers that it's got. She says, I'm looking forward to watching Jaws 19. I'm not sure it'll beat Jaws 8 Robo-Jaws, though. She says, if the future is now, then tomorrow we'll really be going back to the future to get to today. Oh, time travel. So there's some other ones. Oh, happy Back to the Future Day. Maybe the Cubs will win the World Series in the year. Oh, never mind. let's see. Let me know if you need airspace directions for your hover car. And let's see. Any other... Be careful who you date today, or you could start disappearing from photos. I like that one.
Oedipus much?
well, they were right about the antique computer thing, because they had a Mac in the window.
In the museum.
And Great Scott, the future is here.
Grape scotch.
So it has happened before for things like Apple's done this before with Siri for the its September 9th, 2015 event, Worldwide Developers Conference 2014, OK Glass, and more. let's see, another stuff. Other iPhone, you know, this is more global news, so I didn't put it under Bite of the Apple. The police wanted to get to some data on a phone, and they couldn't unlock it themselves, so they turned to Apple for help, and Apple said no. They said, plus, issue is nearly moot on more secure iOS 8 devices. On Tuesday, a New York federal judge told Apple that he is not happy with the company's response regarding whether a law originally written in 1789 applies in a 21st century context. Put another way, can the American legal system compel Apple to hand the government the keys to unlock an iPhone? In its filing one day earlier, Apple lawyers told a federal judge in New York that it is, quote, impossible, unquote, for the company to help unlock an iOS 8 iPhone in a hypothetical criminal case. In this case, however, Apple noted that the phone in question is running iOS 7, which only 10% of current iOS devices are running that OS, which changes the calculus a bit. Quote, as a general matter, however, certain user-generated active files on an iOS device that are contained in Apple's native apps can be extracted. Ken Dryfock, an attorney representing Apple, wrote in the company's seven-page filing, quote, Apple cannot, however, extract email, calendar entries, or any third-party app data. Little is known about this case, which is under seal, but federal authorities have obtained a search warrant to search the locked device. The investigation is yet another example of the invocation of the All Writs Act. See the stuff you learn when you listen to this show? An 18th century federal law that simply allows courts to issue a writ or order which compels a person or company to do something. For some time now, prosecutors have turned to courts to try to force companies to help in situations where it's otherwise stymied. But bringing Apple into a case like this is new. It's the first time that a judge has questioned the authority of the All Writs Act to grant supplemental orders to accompany such warrants and asked Apple for its views on the feasibility and burden associated with such an order before issuing it. That's according to their attorney. He indicated that the question of the All Writs Act was nearly moot, highlighting that on devices running iOS 8 or higher, there is, quote, a feature that prevents anyone without the device's passcode from accessing the device's encrypted data. This includes Apple. Now, if that's true, that I would think that they're not going to lie in front of a judge, that this is not like some kind of theater so that people think that they're
iOS devices.
That
would be my one suspicion. I think it is getting a lot more popular for like a lot of the big companies to publicly go up against and, you know, fight for the users, which is pretty cool. But I'm still, you know, because there's been so much compliance between, like, you know, AT&T and, you know, certain three-letter agencies and some other carriers, I'm just always a little bit suspicious.
True.
Well, like, what else is going on that they're not fighting? But I do think that Apple's doing what they need to
do. Are taking it to court to go over it to try and make it happen.
I want to believe Apple's doing the right thing.
Yeah, the judge was not satisfied with the answer. He said, inviting Apple to submit its views on the feasibility and burdensomeness of the government's request, I did not intend to limit its submission to those matters, but rather to focus its attention on particular factual questions. I therefore respectfully invite Apple to supplement its submission by addressing the legal question before the court, namely whether the All Writs Act empowers the court to compel Apple to provide the technical assistance the government seeks. You know, it'll be interesting to watch what happens in this one. Outside legal scholars noted that Apple has drawn the line between a locked iOS 7 device, which may technically be able to be opened, and the fully encrypted iOS device, which will soon encompass all such iPhones and iPads. So, we'll see what happens on this one. We'll keep an eye on it and see what the it does sound like the judge appears likely to side against the government, as he did in a ruling earlier in the month, but he said he would wait to hear further from both parties before making a final ruling. And in the, wow, this will help everybody out category, of, you know, this is going to stop the hacking. Congress is trying to ban car hacking in every possible form. Doesn't that make you feel safer already? Today, the House Energy and Commerce Committee began safety hearings with a proposed bill to reform the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. That bill contains a provision which completely outlaws car owners from hacking their own cars, because, of course, they want to shut all the doors so that, you know, I don't agree with it every time you say it, but this time, when it's something as security by obscurity as cars are, the outlawing it for the hacking means the people who are going to do it are the ones, the bad guys who don't care.
Yeah, what it does to me, it tells kind of the companies, the big automakers, like, hey, it's okay. We're going to handle this through legislation. Yeah. We're going to tell the bad guys, hey, bad guys, please don't do bad things. Be nice people, which bad guys are going to be like, yeah. Okay.
And no. You can lay back on your fat butt and just, we'll protect you with these laws instead of you actually securing your stuff.
And that's what they need to regulate. They need to lay down, I think, harder laws for the manufacturers and say, hey, you have to secure your operating systems that run this. You've got to, you know, like, firewall off the canvas. You've got to, you know, make these things harder to get into or control these things and maybe open up some other things, you know, for hobbyists. But yeah, you own the car. That's yours. I think you should be able to mess with it. That's just me.
Yeah, well, this would be the kind of thing where they could make it illegal for you to plug in that jack and get diagnostic data from your own car.
Or like a lot of people that might, you know, take their cars out to the racetracks, even motorcycles, remapping your engines, like, you know, how your intake works and the oxygen mixes and stuff like that. That's like a big hobbyist thing where people will trade maps and you tweak their cars that way. That's going to be shut off from users too, you know.
So pretty sad. The draft of the bill is you'll be able to find a link. I can't post the stuff because I don't have my I'm not on my regular computer. I picked up the wrong one that I was fixing for somebody else that looks exactly the same, and I picked up the wrong one, so I'm on a kind of plain Jane machine. But I'll post the links and stuff later. So it prohibits, quote, any person from accessing any system, quote, either wirelessly or through a wired connection. The ban would be far too broad and would ban helpful research as well as malicious hacking. You know, it might make it harder to find something like, oh, say the Volkswagen diesel hack that Volkswagen did. You know, they could protect and say, well, if you're finding that, you're just you're hacking your car and it's illegal. Fortunately, it's also not supported. It's not supported by the Federal Trade Commission. The FTC's prepared statement to the committee said that we support the goal of deterring criminals from accessing vehicle data. Security researchers have, however, uncovered security vulnerabilities in connected cars by accessing such systems. Responsible researchers often contact companies to inform them of these vulnerabilities so the companies can voluntarily make their cars safer. By prohibiting such access even for research purposes, this provision would likely disincentivize such research to the detriment of consumers' privacy, security, and safety. And they are right. This would be, you know, it's wrong for Congress and the automobile industry to try and paper this. I'm going to put it the way I think about it, which is to try and paper over insecure systems on their part with laws that say, oh, well, you shouldn't have been able to find out that we have crappy security on our cars. That just, you know, getting arrested for that is or having that be illegal.
They're making it illegal to pull back the curtain and kind of expose how weak things are, really.
And so this is not the first time this year that car manufacturers have opposed measures that would increase independent research into car safety. They also opposed an exemption to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which would allow people into the systems of their cars. And we talked about that on another episode. So hopefully Congress will listen to the FTC and not the car industry about this stuff, because if they can't handle it, if they can't do the job themselves, then they need to leave it open to smarter people, which maybe don't work for the car.
No, not all the car manufacturers are taking that stance. The one that kind of shines out, Tesla, has been really open about, like, getting their software out there, letting people beat it up, even to the point where they've not donated, like, keep it forever, but they've brought out Teslas to, like, DEF CON, to large hacking conferences, and had contests and let everyone get whatever access they want to the car and beat it up in any way they can to see what they can do. And that's kind of the attitude you need, and that's what they're doing, is they're going out, getting the best people that are out there on the hobbyist side trying to do it, and they're using it's a free resource. And all the other auto, you know, the automakers are seeing it as it's a threat when it really isn't. It's extra R&D.
So, and here's one that'll make you feel really, really extra safe if you don't feel safe in your car. But at least, you know, the CIA has got to have, you know, really learned about technology and stuff like that. Yeah, the WikiLeaks has posted a collection of documents that were, quoting this article, were ganked from CIA Director John Brennan's email account, which was reportedly hacked by a teen stoner earlier this week. The hack revealed that Brennan had transmitted copies of sensitive government documents in, and here's the punchline to the whole thing, in his personal AOL account.
Hey, if you've got 60,000 free hours, that's kind of saving the government money, really.
So apparently the CIA has a warehouse full of free AOL disks, and they're still going through them and using them. I guess it's a budget-cutting deal. The hack revealed that Brennan had transmitted copies of sensitive government documents in his personal AOL account. At the time of the hack, CNN reported that no classified material had been compromised. The initial WikiLeaks Brennan dump includes many sensitive documents, including Brennan's own social graph, which was included in Brennan's national security position form. It includes, because this wouldn't be secret at all, Brennan's recommendations to the U.S. president about how to manage affairs related to Iran, a letter from Senator Kit Bond, vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that details how to, quote, make future interrogation methods compliant and legal, WikiLeaks states. So isn't that sweet?
It looks like a ton of socials and dates of birth and email addresses and phone numbers for aides and contacts, as well as their security clearance levels.
Wow, well, at least they're only in our intelligence, the top levels of our intelligence agencies, so that they're having their stuff out on all over the world couldn't possibly be harmful.
No.
Essentially, oh, and how did the guy do it? How did the stoner guy do it? He says he obtained access by posing as a Verizon worker to trick another employee into revealing the spy chief's personal information. Using information like the four digits of Brennan's bank card, which Verizon gave to him, the hacker and his associates were able to reset the password on Brennan's AOL account repeatedly as the spy chief fought to regain control of it. Can you imagine it being in an online, I guess it's not 10 o'clock, peeing match with the director of the CIA? That, now, see, I think you could make a movie out of that. Some stoners hacking the head of the CIA's deal.
They even attribute it to a group. I would do more of a cover-up. I'd be like, it was, you know, double Estonian agents that, you know, got into everything. Very elite. Not like some, you know, kid in Iowa.
Not the latest episode of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
Yeah, who was bored waiting for the pizza delivery guy to show up. You know,
the hacker who says he's under 20 years old told Wired that he wasn't working alone, but that he and two other people worked on the breach. So it's a conspiracy. He says they first did a reverse lookup of Brennan's mobile phone number to discover that he was a Verizon customer. Then one of them posed as a Verizon technician and called the company asking for details about his account. We told them that we work for Verizon and we have a customer on a scheduled callback. He told Wired. The caller told Verizon that he was unable to access Verizon's customer database on his own because, quote, our tools were down. After providing the Verizon employee with a fabricated employee V code, a unique code that he says Verizon assigns employees, they got the information they were seeking, including the account number, four-digit PIN, the backup mobile number on the account, Brennan's AOL email address, and the last four digits on his bank card. After getting the info, we called AOL and said we were locked out of our AOL account, he said. They asked security questions like the last four on the bank card. And so they told them, and that reset the password. I'm surprised they didn't just act old and clueless until the AOL people said, yeah, we reset it to password with a capital P. Oh, 01. Password 01. Please change
it. Now I got to change my password.
Please change it. It's like, well, I thought that's what it was in the first place. So anyways, so that you know. So yeah, AOL. There's a place. The AOL, that's where you think of. When I think of keeping my data secure, I think of AOL.
I think that's the biggest tragedy in all this. Not that he got doxxed everything out there, just that everyone knows that he still uses AOL.
And certainly not ironically.
That, you know, that we're kind of close to the point in time where that should be enough that he resigns.
I'm with you. I think Pete said a year or two ago where we were past the point where it was cute for, you know, senators and, you know, like law people that are involved with, you know, making legislation say like, oh, I don't get it. You know, it's I'm, you know, that internet quote stuff. You know, I'll get my age to do it. That's not cool anymore. We're at post-internet age, kind of. We're getting into that, and our laws need to match the technology. And, yeah, there's no room for people that don't understand it anymore.
If you want to be a functional adult in this world now, you know, I understand that there are people – clearly who can't afford an internet connection at home and can't afford, you know, maybe necessarily the computer and all that stuff.
Libraries.
You really need to, yeah, go to libraries.
KPFT.
You need to look at, you know, you can get a long ways, frankly, with a tablet, with an Android tablet or an iPad. You can get the older ones. The ones, when they put a new one out, the older ones get cheaper and you can get a hold of one and that at least gets you on the internet. And if you have a cell phone, if you have a smartphone or a cell phone, you can get a tablet that has LTE, and for $10 a month, you can at least have some kind of presence on the internet. And I think that's something we may want to devote some time to talking about that on a future show.
Cheapest way to get online and maintain. Yeah. You can do it very, very inexpensively if you know how to go about it. It doesn't, you know, automatically result in dumpster diving and having to call us. There's a happy medium in there.
But if you're an executive at the highest levels of the intelligence apparatus of the United States of America, I think you should know your stuff. That at this point, that would be, you know, we don't need, it's like we don't need horse and buggy experts at the Indy 500, and we don't need people who are old and out of touch on top of electronic intelligence gathering
or
agencies.
Hosting a radio show.
No, we need that. We need those.
Hey, I got a breaking news story. Breaking news. Michael J. Fox was arrested for insider sports betting today.
No.
Yes, Michael J. Fox was arrested Wednesday morning in relation to insider sports betting on DraftKings. Fox aroused suspicion after achieving a statistically impossible perfect record on the site under the username No Chicken. Authorities found an unusually worn copy of Sports Almanac, which was just recently printed, and which was has markings cataloging winning bets as Fox has placed since the late 80s.
That is awesome. Is that Onion or who did
that? He apparently won $100,000 off of Pete Rose.
We suspect Mr. Fox has been using an alias to hide his real identity after damaging the space-time continuum, said one source within the FBI's Time Crime Division. Under the name of Marty McFly, he was an accomplice to Dr. Emmett Brown in negotiation with terrorists to obtain materials to build a dangerous weapon, allowing the pair to travel through time. Dr. Brown is still on the run and extremely dangerous. We are looking for a criminal mastermind, said the FBI Director Tim Travel. He is extremely intelligent, capable of producing weapons of mass destruction with scarce resources. He built a highly advanced technology known as a flux capacitor in his garage. Brilliant.
I'm sure. Well, DeLorean, you know, what's left of DeLorean is in Houston, if people weren't aware. Up, I think, somewhere in the, like, Greens Point area, if I'm not mistaken. I know there's somewhere near Beltway 8, but... they've got to be loving this. I mean, all the pictures of DeLoreans on the on TV and on the news. In sad entertainment geek news, you know, this one is no, it is not from The Onion. It is not not fake or any of that stuff. After 248 episodes in 13 years, hosts Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman have built crazy contraptions and blown stuff up in the name of science. But they are going to, after the series ends next year, they are done. They're going to say goodbye to the Mythbusters series this winter. They announced Wednesday that its longest running series will return for one final season this January. And then neither does the Discovery Channel nor the show's hosts offer details on why the show is being canceled. I don't know. They don't make it clear. Basically, they're saying it's ending, but it sounds like it's not clear where you know, which why it's ending. It doesn't, you know, canceled sounds like Discovery said, no, you can't do anymore. And the rest of the article sounds a lot like the Mythbusters maybe were done, you know.
So we don't know if they volunteer or leaving voluntarily or if one of the hosts punched the producer in the mouth.
They killed someone. I've got my fingers crossed that they'll do a Mythbusters episode on whether or not this is a myth.
How will they test that one? Hmm. Well, you know, they paired off. I wonder, you know, some of it is, and this is totally, I will identify this as completely my own speculation. It's a conspiracy. But, you know, the fact when they dumped their supporting cast, the co-hosts, you know, Grandy Mahara, Carrie Byron, and Tori Belucci, I think that Discovery, I wonder if the budget hasn't maybe been constantly getting smaller and smaller, and if that's not part of this deal, is they just didn't want to do, you know, that when it gets to the point where they're doing bad episodes you know, where they're doing a bad knockoff of 1960s science programs. Look, you know, we couldn't afford to have an entire package of Mentos and a Diet Coke, but we'll drop this one. We'll drop an Alka-Seltzer in a off-brand Diet Cola and see what happens. Myth busted. You know, it's just, I think that's, so it's unfortunate. Apparently, and then this is the part that I don't, you know, it says that they will end the series with some of the biggest myths they've tested, including car stunts, viral videos, rockets, and explosions. Fans can submit their farewells using hashtag MythYouGuys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The best posts will be featured in the final season as the guys say their own personal goodbyes.
Maybe they got too close to the truth.
Dun, dun, dun. And hey, the X-Files is coming back, and Mythbusters is ending.
That'd be really cool to see Jamie on X-Files. We'll give you that. Be one more lone gunman.
So, on the plus side for you, if you're, let's see, the Science Channel, which is Discovery Channel's sister channel, is going to air every episode of Mythbusters starting on December 23rd and ending on January 3rd. The Holiday Mega Marathon will air the episodes in chronological order, starting with Jet-Assisted Chevy and ending with Star Wars Revenge of the Myth.
Okay, maybe it is Shark Jump in time.
Maybe they were running out of myths that weren't dumb, but... And that is the news, which we're almost to the hour. I guess we'll add this on the bite of the apple, which I think I have ready.
Thanks for that, Pete.
If
you don't do that, that makes me
story,
itchy.
So.
The news isn't over until either you or Flick to drop that, and I can't do it.
There is not a ton of Apple news, so this one we're just tacking on to the end of the news. If you put the El Capitan update on your MacBook or your Mac and are having trouble with Microsoft Office, then you want to rush to download the new El Capitan update that came out today, because one of the main points of it is to fix Microsoft Office crashes.
I just learned a few days ago, because I did my laptop, but not my desktop. And I needed to install some VPN software or something, and I didn't watch it or something, but I didn't know that El Capitan now runs in a rootless mode, where you can't do anything to like a lot of the system directories. Like you can't put files in it, you can't modify files in it.
You mean like you would need to if you were doing a VPN?
Yeah, there's a lot of software that doesn't work anymore in El Capitan because they did that and now they can't. And the only way you can get around it is you have to boot into safe mode, or what is not safe mode, but recovery mode. You have to boot into recovery mode, and at the terminal you have to do CRS util disable to turn off. I forgot what it's called. It's SIM or PIM. It's the mode that protects all that stuff. So you have to turn that off, then reboot, then run whatever it is, and then if you can either leave it like that, or then you reboot again, turn it back on, and then reboot again, so Now it's installed, but you're back to the rootless protected mode.
Oh, they also put some new emojis in the update. So even though your VPN doesn't work, you can have cool new emojis. Maybe the emoji
like
for
tears and gnashing of teeth.
The emoji for not having enough privileges on your own machine. So that's it. There was no other
it's
big Apple.
SIP. It's the System Integrity Protocol.
Yeah, which I should have remembered that because of.
I kind of understand the idea behind it to some level, but it's kind of. I don't know. It feels like a little draconian that you're that locked down.
Well, or shouldn't it? You know, it makes more sense. You know, yeah, it makes sense from a security standpoint. But okay, if you're actively doing something that requires that kind of different level of access, why not pop something up that says, okay, here's what you're doing, and you have to put in your path. You know, kind of the sort of the sudo kind of thing,
like SE Linux kind of style. You know, where you've got access control lists, and you know, you've got to escalate. You know, and you can say, okay, only these certain people can do this, and you know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And it seems like they just went very black and white with this.
Yeah. So that it's you.
It's the iOSification of the desktop operating system.
I guess some of it's at least. You know, I'll give them a third of a point for it's an attempt to you can tell it's a security thing that the vast majority of people are going to benefit from the security of that. I don't think, though, that jacking your power users is a very good
idea. No, I haven't dropped down to this. If you launch a terminal, though, and you drop down to root, you sudo over, you can still get access to everything, right? Or no?
I don't think so. I don't
Whoa,
think
no, okay. That's a little bit of a travesty, I think. I feel ever so slightly violated.
I haven't really played with it, but my understanding is that there's some stuff you can't do anymore.
Even as root even on root. The command line.
No. I mean, I've got my laptop. I guess I can try it here in just a minute.
I wonder if it's...
Wow.
You wonder... So is it trying to... you know, it's called System Integrity Protection.
I mean...
I think it's trying, like, you know, Windows gets blown out all the time for that. I think they're trying
directory.
To protect it where... you know, somebody, some process can't, you know, Trojan you, even if you want it to, even if you tell it to install, it won't work.
I get that. And technically, you know, like your average user could go in and wipe out their entire stuff. You could do that in Windows too, you know. RMRF is kind of universal.
Yeah, it says the way they call it, I looked it up, just real quick, it's a new security policy that applies to every running process. Policy extends additional protections to components on disk and at runtime, only allowing system binaries to be modified by the system installer and software updates. Code injection and runtime attachments to system binaries are no longer.
So as long as you get it through the App Store,
from Apple,
you can do it.
Walled.
But third party, no, can't do it.
So you have to get the Hack My Mac app from Apple.
CSR util space status will tell you if it's running on yours, but it sounds like it's running if you've got Yosemite. El Capitan.
All right, that music tells us we have to take a short break. I know the conversation has been stimulating and exciting, but we do have to take the break. So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo.
Planted Forward is a nonprofit organization that helps refugee farmers start their own urban farming businesses within Houston city limits. All produce is grown using organic gardening methods, and we offer weekly shares of produce from farms. Planted Forward's next season will begin the week of December 28, 2015. In a weekly share, you will receive 6 to 8 different varieties of freshly harvested vegetables grown using organic gardening methods. You can visit www.planetforward.org for more information. KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. And now, round two, fight!
Well, maybe we should play some stuff off of Afflicted's playlist from. I know last week I said there was going to be a new. I think I said there was going to be a new thing.
You did say there's going to be
did.
A new.
And I lied.
Look, if you're going to.
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
There you go. So, no, I haven't done the new one. I had other stuff I had to take care of.
So I feel like if you make commitments to the show to do something on a weekly basis, it's really important you do it kind of every week.
That means a lot
just
coming
saying.
From
yeah.
you, Barrett.
You know, the only thing we're consistent at is stuff that we're not proud of, which has now become kind of a badge of honor.
And like the links to this stuff will get posted. They're not posted now, sorry, but I will post them. Usually I get them posted in the intro to the show, but I'm on different hardware tonight, so I've got a Barrett-esque excuse for why they aren't yet. But this one's kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot more places that are doing the open office thing, and I think that a lot of that comes from because it's really, really freaking cheap to just have a big open warehouse and shove desks in it and have everybody sit together. But sometimes you do need some places to be. And the guys in the studio can see the pictures. Somebody came up with these pods. They're wooden pods that basically are like three-sided boxes, and they have sort of a couch in them, but they also have like tables and other stuff. And you can push them together to make little rooms, and they roll around. They're on casters, so you can move them around.
Afflicted can make a castle out of them.
If that was, you know, if that's your open office, then that kind of makes sense. I think that would be, you know, the only thing is, I think that, you know, you look at them and they're basically a three-sided couch with a little roof on it. Except I think they want like thousands and thousands of dollars for them. Where you could probably build your own, frankly, if you're a clever geek, I would think if you had a startup, you could probably do. And then some of them, they do have the shape of a house, and you can like put them next to each other and make sort of a tunnel thing for meetings or whatever. So there's something for those of you out there to try.
It's cool to have something ready-made like that, because like when we do pillow forts before our calls, that takes, you know, 15, 20 minutes of extra setup.
Here's one that I wonder what people are going to think of. I don't know if you've seen that YouTube is going to have a subscription tier now. Yet again, they're trying for it. It's called YouTube Red, or maybe we should call it YouTube, kind of like Netflix. Please pay us $10 a month or whatever. It will let viewers watch videos without ads and save videos for offline, among other perks. That could have some value. It will cost $10 a month on the web or Android. And then $13 per month on iOS because of Apple's fee. That's true. You know, the deal is basically Apple gets their cut, and rather than have it come out of the YouTube side, they've just raised the price for anybody who's doing it on an iPhone or an iPad. YouTube Red, which launches alongside a new app called YouTube Music, will let people stream video and audio ad-free on YouTube, YouTube Kids, YouTube Gaming, Google Play Music, and YouTube's new music app, regardless of which device they happen to be using.
Is that going to cannibalize any of, like, the Google Play streaming stuff? Because, you know, YouTube and Google and streaming music services.
To make the price tag easier to swallow, YouTube's offering exclusive content, such as a feature-length movie based on the Unicorn Island YouTube series. A 10-episode season of Sing It, a show by the Fine Brothers, originally pitched to MTV. Other launch partners include expected names like Maker Studios and College Humor. Right out of the gate, none of the original content YouTube is launching features a roster of household Hollywood names, but with exclusive video now tied directly to its paid subscription strategy, it's hard to imagine that YouTube's focus on original shows won't continue. They're also pushing their huge role in online music with the launch of a new app. YouTube Music, formerly known as YouTube Music Key, is a standalone music streaming app designed to take on Spotify and Apple Music. It will exist alongside Google Play Music, the company's other all-you-can-stream music service, which is included in YouTube Red's $10 subscription price.
Okay, because the other one's like $9 a month, so $1 a month you switch.
Oh, you pay an extra buck and you get the YouTube
thing. That's why I was curious like how that was going to work. Okay.
So that could work. I think this one may hit at a different level than the people here in the studio. I wonder about this. Seems to the people that they're launching, some of this stuff just kind of passed by Maker Studios and some of that. That is the people who do like Let's Play. They do game playthroughs, and the under 25 set watches this stuff religiously. There are big stars out there who have millions of followers, like nine million. Yeah, PewDiePie is ginormous example. There are all kinds of next layer ones who have 9 million followers. And
well, even just random people can start stuff, and if you're good, people will glom on and watch. And
although
I've never really gotten into that. That's
a
whole.
Make that much money. I have kids. I have kids of the right age, and so they watch. They go on YouTube and watch all the. Although the other thing is, the kids like that. You know, sometimes I will watch the ad out of, I'll help pay. So I'm going to watch the ad and let it go through and then watch whatever video. The kids, it's like, skip this video. As soon as that shows up, boom, they're skipping. And so I'm sure they don't get paid as much for that. But the tough part for YouTube, though, is they're saying, okay, well, we won't show you ads on all the free stuff you've already been watching. And if people feel like they've done well enough with just blocking the ads on their own or skipping them, I don't know if there'll be. I don't know. I have a feeling that the next step will be that more videos will just not be available to the or that the ads will be more intrusive or something.
The ads, there are already a lot of ads. I mean,
there
I'll just
are.
You know, I'll just
the
go to watch something, and more often than not, the video I just want to go check out, there's like a good ad in front of it. A lot of them, like, they might be instructional, you know, like, hey, we're going to learn how to this design me thing in this
or
software
the, or
package.
Or the video's 20 seconds. And
yeah,
the,
exactly.
The advertisement's 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of, like the 20-minute videos that I need to watch like 3 minutes of, there'll be like a 30-second ad that are stacked in front of it, and that sometimes that takes longer to watch that than it does for me to go and get the little bit that I'm looking for.
So I wonder, you just wonder if at some point they're going to push towards.
But the pricing on that also includes access to Google Music, I think.
Yeah, the Google mm-hmm. Play.
So it's not quite as bad as you're going to pay $10 a month just to get ads off of YouTube videos.
I'm guessing they're trying to, I think maybe they've identified, since it's made to take on Spotify and Apple Music, their idea is, well, don't give $10 a month to Spotify or Apple Music, give the $10 to us and we'll give you more stuff. So on the one hand, they could be opening up for more competition and for sort of price competition.
Did we touch on Hulu a few months ago? That they had like their kind of basic subscription, and then they for I think like $2 or $3 more per month, you can get it completely commercial free, which is actually kind of nice.
There's a certain list of shows that have to have commercials by contractual.
Oh, I've never. I guess
some
I don't watch
those shows.
Some
network shows have a contract where they have to have a certain number of commercials. Isn't that nice? But I don't. This will be interesting. You almost wonder why they didn't start a separate thing. Instead of trying to take free to paid.
YouTube Red is not that great of a name. There could have been better names. They could have maybe done some research to see what else was out there. I don't know.
Red.
Makes me think of Marlboro Red. They're shooting for a particular audience out there. And as spoiled by Flicked earlier, today on the semi-official Back to the Future Day, Nike has officially unveiled the real-life shoe, the self-tying shoes from Back to the Future 2, and given the first pair to Michael J. Fox. Let's see. Although the project started as science fiction, we're now proud to turn that fiction into fact, said legendary Nike designer Tinker Hatfield. He says more pairs will be released in 2016, with proceeds from the auction going to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. In other words, none of us is probably going to, if we're lucky, we'll see a pair of these shoes, maybe somewhere, but not likely that we'll be wearing them, I think. Nike officially announced the shoe on its website this afternoon, with CEO Mark Parker stating that it invented, quote, a new technology that will benefit all athletes. Nike says it has begun testing the power laces, as they've been dubbed, across multiple sports for potential application in the future. Official details of the auctions will be posted on Nike's Twitter account in the spring. So there's that, but you better start and get your startup going so you can have the money to bid on the self-tying shoes. Of course, at a certain point, when the price of self-tying shoes goes up enough, wouldn't you just hire somebody to tie your shoes for you? Could be. Here's something for
shoe
free.
Shoe tying boy, get over here.
Here's something
Velcro.
For free.
But you're wearing your loafers, sir. I don't care. Tie them.
Tighter. Here's one that's for free. According to his Twitter bio, pixel artist Leon, at L-E-Y-A-W-N, Leon, I guess, spends his time posting online and making pixel art of the fat bird from Yoshi's Island. Now he's combined those two passions in a short adventure game that you can play with using the power of tweets and GIFs. Depending on how you want to say it. Taking place over a number of Twitter accounts, Leon's cool game is a clever testament to the way different technologies can transform simple game experiences into something better than the sum of their parts. So I'm guessing you have to follow this guy at L-E-Y-A-W-N and then see if you can figure out how you can play his... it's the kind of adventure game, I think, where you make choices and click links and
go
and
north.
It tells you what the... they have a screenshot of game over, continue.
You're killed by a Gru. You're eaten by a Gru.
You
by
swing the sword and slash at the air. You look badass. You trip over the cat and impel yourself in the head.
I cast magic missile.
Game over.
So one piece of advice, pet the cat. Cats love that. Maybe Dwight's playing right now.
Maybe Dwight is part of this game. But so there's one. There's a free one. Since it's free, I would put that under try. And finally, not all new technology. I think this one. I think there's some questions about. I'll describe it, and you'll probably be fine with it up until we get to the part where we talk about how much it costs. The Ember Smart Mug. The Ember Mug provides the perfect vessel for consistent drinking temperatures for your coffee or hot tea and will keep it that way for up to 2 hours. When coffee's ready, it's usually too hot to drink. And when it's ready to sip at the perfect temperature, it doesn't stay there very long. Ember cools things down to the ideal temperature without the need for complicated buttons or instructions. Just rotate the dial at the bottom to set the temperature and enjoy. It's got a cool, like, sort of LED on the on the side that tells the temperature. So you've got that going for you. It's leak-proof, portable, and easy to charge using the slim, compact coaster. You can even pair via Bluetooth and adjust the temperature using your smartphone. So there's that. Now how much would you pay? I'm thinking, if it was 40 or 50 bucks, that'd be at the high end of what would be rational. Apparently this lists at over like 110 bucks. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should have try, buy, fry, or hope that your rich relative gives it to you on a whim would be the, I guess, the entry where this would come in. This is one, I guess, where I am rooting for somebody to... This seems like a maker project that could be good, where they come up with a better mug that keeps the temperature.
There's got to be a better way to do that, and I'm assuming you've got to recharge this, right?
I mean, it has a batteries, coaster, so it's... There's, okay. So they've done...
It's
the
fueled
things
by
done
the coffee you put in it.
No, you put it, so I'm guessing it's got the capacitive, you know, where you set it down and on this coaster that's probably hooked up to like USB or something and charges it. And it does have it is a cup with Bluetooth and it displays the temperature and it's, so it's programmable and you can use your smartphone with it. So.
See, that's dangerous too. This is the whole Internet of Things coming in. Did you hear about the teapots in the UK?
No.
So this just happened. I think it just happened over the weekend. But there's like a certain teapot that's Wi-Fi enabled because, you know, UK people are very big into the tea. So if, you know, you're coming home from work early or whatever and you want to like start the kettle up, you can do so over the teapot. The issue is some
over
researchers.
Over the teapot?
I mean, over the internet, more or less. Yeah.
They call the internet the teapot.
The teapot. Yeah, you dump it out. Anyway. So yeah, you can actually go and say like, hey, go ahead, you know, start the boil. The issue is there are some implementation issues with this. You can actually drive by, sniff for the teapot. And then what you do is it'll actually give up the password to the Wi-Fi.
War potting.
Yeah, war potting, more or less. So you throw a whole bunch of packets at it, and eventually it spits out the password to the WPA2 network you're on, and then suddenly you've compromised that person's network. So more or less, you plug in a teapot, and you compromise your whole network.
Tea driving.
Is that called getting teabagged?
I'm a little teapot insecure.
But that's the kind of thing that's going to start to happen. These are really cool, but now instead of, you know, having to protect an operating system and a few other things, now it's like, you know, you're going everyone's going to have to be security.
You're going to have crumpets. Yeah. Somebody bring me some crumpets.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you have a whole bunch of people that are not security conscious coming to the internet with their bad passwords and AOL accounts, and they're creating devices, which...
Well, except they're actually, you know, it sounds like, oh, well, no, the teapot, we're going to put it has to actually log into your Wi-Fi network. So you're thinking, as you would set it up, is, you know, frankly, it's probably kind of a pain in the butt to set up this teapot on your network. And you do that, and you wouldn't expect that then it was the place that was releasing, you know, that it was the weak spot in your network because you've put a password in it and, you know, you had to go look at it on the modem, you know, and get the long 20-digit password.
It's like your
password.
Own personal Ashley Madison on the counter. It has your confidential information, and it just gives it up. Oh, he's an Earl Grey drinker. We know.
So now you can walk into your house and look at all your devices.
Chamomile!
You can walk into your house and look at all your devices and go, which one of you is going to betray me? It's like it's not the Internet of Things. It's Game of Thrones.
It's the Game of Things.
Samsung Smart Fridge got owned a handful of months ago. I mean, there's just, that was, you know, late August, August 30th, I guess, right after DEF CON. So yeah, it's like all these Wi-Fi enabled things are coming into your house.
But since it was England, all the hackers have done is made it so that your teapot gives you very tepid tea.
It's still very polite.
This isn't as good as it was when we had the old pot. So yeah, again, securing things. It's like that should. The problem is, none of these things were set up to be secured in the first place. You know, the first ones they did with Wi-Fi and all that, there wasn't passwords. The idea is, oh, well, no, it should just be out there so that your device can hook up to it and talk. Because they still keep wanting to have the Minority Report thing where, you know, because of your phone, then you walk past the store and it gives you an ad for you, you know, that's tailored for you that you'll like, which I can't tell which is the bigger leap of the imagination, that you're going to enjoy walking around being advertised at all the time.
Tracked.
Or that this whole thing is going to be totally insecure and not, you know, basically reveal your personal data or whatever to through many different holes, you know, where they're fighting to see who can get your stuff first, your car or your teapot or your refrigerator or your smartphone or that, you know. So and tying it back to the news from the earlier part of the show, the Apple thing. You know, when they actually do something that makes it so that external people and entities can't get your data, the government's not happy about it. So it's kind of, you know, it doesn't seem – there doesn't yet seem to be a sort of clear attitude or a clear idea that this stuff should be secure first and then – because criminals could be using their teapots to brew up evil plans.
I don't like this now because so Google, Apple, a lot of the big giants are taking the stand against the government saying, hey, we're not going to give up, you know, user privacy. But, you know, you've got like some cash-strapped smart kettle makers or what have you. And you're like, hey, you want to take a couple mil of angel money to like put this little piece of, you know, hardware in here?
Oh, yeah, dear. Our free government teapots arrived.
So this one, the one that they're beating up, it's called the Smarter Wi-Fi Kettle is the brand name. So apparently maybe the smart Wi-Fi kettle wasn't all that great. So the smarter one still needs improvement, maybe. I would say wait for the smartest Wi-Fi kettle to come out and give it a shot.
Sounds like a plan. Oh, well, on Tesla news, while we're sort of talking about products, apparently there was widespread panic because Consumer Reports had given them this like super high rating for the Tesla Model S, and now apparently there are, quote, reliability issues. What that means is they've gotten complaints from people like that there was a problem with the big screen in the dash or all these things, which are under warranty, but of course Consumer Reports' idea is, and you know, I don't fault them. I don't want to sound like that. But, you know, their idea is, of course, better that it just works than having the, you know, than just that they'll clean it up fast with a warranty. But, yeah, apparently that affected the Tesla stock because
the one thing I never thought of, and this kind of came out in the article, was that you wouldn't think, you know, like my cars have rattles, you know, stuff like that. But a lot of it is covered up by a little bit of road noise. But, you know, you've got engine noise. You've got other parts of the car that make noises to cover up these little squeaks, these little, you know, little I guess things that might grate on you over time, but because the Tesla is so silent, these little pieces rubbing together, that's a big source of complaints too. Most people are saying like, hey, we've got this squeak that won't go away, we've got this. And it's like those were never an issue for any of the other car makers because there was enough noise to mask it. But now when you've got a completely silent interior and you've got this little, you know, people
you
are starting to complain.
And get a squeak
yeah.
Or...
yeah, yeah.
It's like the way people complain when a spam message gets past the spam filters.
Oh, but the only thing they complain more about though is when a message that shouldn't have gotten in spam is now in the spam folder. Yeah. They still found it, but it's in the spam folder. That's the end of the world.
And then it's your fault that it went there somehow.
Right.
Like, well, how did your email get the
spam folder?
I can't
tell you how many times the world has ended at my job. Jeez.
Well, especially the ones where they send out newsletters and wonder why people, you know, aren't receiving them. And then you look at the newsletter and there's all kinds of pictures and links in it. And it's like, I'm sorry, but to a spam filter, sending pictures and links makes you, you know, actually, if you want it to get through and not get hit by the spam filter, you need to hire a spammer because they seem to be able to still do it. Because I get, you know, I've gotten it down, you know, we've got plenty of time left in the show, so we'll talk about it on anti-spam techniques. I got really tired because I was trying to do sort of inbox zero, and I got really tired of the fact that after I put in all my filters to put mail into the folders that I wanted it, it meant that my inbox was full of garbage. You know, that's where all the stuff built up of all these ads and spams and stuff. And so the thing I came to is that nothing goes in my inbox unless it's sorted. It gets sorted to there. And otherwise it goes into, I have a junk review box.
You got like a negative kind of setup.
So if they, yeah, if they haven't, it can go directly to my inbox if it's somebody that I've emailed. You know, if you look on your email scripts, one of the ones that's going to give you the quickest change is if somebody needs to either be in your contacts or that you've emailed them before. Because see, if you sent them an email, that establishes a relationship.
It's like a firewall almost. You know, it's okay. We've got an outbound connection. We'll allow the inbound connection.
And so, at least on Apple, and I believe on Google's email client, Thunderbird, and most should, any decent one should have this. But where if you can tell it that, then you don't have to worry. See, the thing is, the contact book thing got old. I've tried to do that one before, but when you have to go through and find 50 contacts and make a little contact card for them in your contacts and all that stuff. If you miss one, then they don't, you know, they are not included. But anybody that you email, well, your email client knows who you sent email to. And so I set it for that. And now what happens is I get, you know, in the morning I'll have 20 or 30 in my like junk review. And frankly, the other thing that happens is the ones that shouldn't be junk that I should be putting on my sort list to go to, you know, like with the show, I get a lot of like pitches for, you know, where they send you a pitch for guests, mostly like guests who there's just no connection at all, right, with what we do, you know, or there. I love the like conspiracy political guests, because you kind of go, yeah, that just really fits in with our show.
Google and Hotmail create all spam, so you'll stop admitting your own mail servers.
No, it's more like Obama is like, well, it's going like to bomb us from Mars kind of stuff.
The pitches that,
well, that is true.
The pitches that I don't like that I get are the ones where, you know, something really cool is happening. You know, it's the new iPhone. It's, you know, this security breach or whatever. And they want to present you with some expert on the iPhone or some expert on security breaches. And it's really not about talking about that story. It's just a way to funnel in their business.
You know, yeah, because you can see the expert then is, oh, senior vice president of marketing at antiviral company.
Right, or it's, you know.
So they're going to tell you how buying their product can stop you from whatever.
The sales lead at Best Buy wants to talk to you about the new iPhone.
So, but yeah, if the doing the sort like that, you know, frankly, what happens, the other thing, that the other positive thing is in that junk review folder, at a certain point when the same stuff keeps getting in there that I read it and then I delete it, then I start, you know, you start feeling like you're wasting your time with the stuff that you are receiving that you want, and then you write this, you know, you add the rule so that theirs gets sorted into the, you know, press release thing or whatever. But it does cut it down, you know, cut it down to where I don't have that many, and it's real clear, because so it's like it's either delete or junk or sort it somewhere.
The whole zero, the notion of a zero inbox is kind of catching on. And a lot of people get pretty high and mighty about it. They get kind of preachy, like I've got zero, you know, zero unread emails, I suppose. I don't see what the big deal is. I got down to zero a few days ago, and really it was like two clicks. It was select all,
right,
mark
click,
as red.
Right click, mark all,
boom,
as red.
Zero, yeah.
Yeah, there's just one delete key and multi-select away from a clean inbox.
Just control A, delete. Yeah.
Yeah, but although then also though you've got a bunch of just garbage that's sitting there. That's the other one is, unfortunately, like Google's, they give you so much space with Gmail that then there's not really an incentive to go in and clean your mail account out.
No.
Well, here's my pet peeve is, you know, you don't have to, you know, when I remember when I used Eudora, one of the greatest features of Eudora was you could choose whether or not you had a quick button for adding a signature to an email. Or you could set it so that when you replied to something, it didn't append your signature file to it. And these days, people have signature files with all kinds of links and graphics and stuff in it. And those things trigger spam filters.
Yeah.
And and first of all, you don't have to send your signature to a coworker. I know who it's from.
Right.
I don't really care what you do.
I don't need your picture and every
social
media
link. Well, but what's even worse is that, you know, a lot of the ticketing systems that service desks and help desks use capture, they don't they don't present the email in its glory with the signature stuff. It just captures all the images and throws them in as an attachment to the ticket. So you'll get somebody, I'll get somebody every once in a while who will send, okay, I'm sending a screenshot of the error I got. And so I have to go through like 30 attachments because I've got every little graphic file on there to figure out which one is the screenshot.
Yeah. You don't have that, and just sorting by like what has attachments is totally gone out the window too. Because it's like, you know, if I'm looking for spreadsheets, I'm looking for something like that. I used to be able to say like, okay, show me what's got attachments. But if everything has like two little, you know, a little flower image, a little whatever, your company logo, you know, that gets tough.
And also, just for those of you listening at home too, stationery and email, don't use it. Don't use it, and don't use curly Q fonts and weird stuff like that. And
wingdings.
Don't put gray text on black background or yellow text on white background.
Only use plain text. Hit a hard return before the 80th character, and always reply in line. Don't top reply, and don't conclude everything in the reply when you reply to say yes, and you have 700 lines of 45 communications below, with 17 copies of confidential. If you weren't the intended recipient, please da da da.
I like disclaimers. I collect email disclaimers.
And don't reply all once the conversation has reached the people it needs to reach. You know, delete people who are no longer involved in the conversation. So if you send out a blanket email saying, hey, I'm looking for who's in charge of this server, I'm having a problem, and somebody pipes up and says, oh, yeah, it's me, I can take care of that for you. Don't reply all saying, okay, I need you to do this.
Or better yet, reply and say, cool. Reply all to say, cool.
And don't reply thanks or cool or... And for crying out loud.
Stay off my lawn.
We poke the bear.
Don't reply to email that says, please don't reply to this email.
Okay.
You know, but the thing is, what's even worse now is now this happens with text messages. So you get in like a group text. I had this happen like a year or two ago.
It will never end.
So I had one friend that I would sometimes watch Monday night football games with. Well, he had a group of people, I guess, that he had started to watch them with. So he included a group text of with me with like these like 10 or 12 other people, none of whom I knew, that just said, hey, I think we're going to watch Monday Night Football tonight because the Texans are playing or whatever. And pretty soon, for the next 4 hours or over 7 days, I got texts from nobody that I knew talking about nothing that I cared about. And there was not very little I could do.
Oh, and my other favorite, so you've got the long thread where, you know, who's going to the party or whatever, and it's yes, yes, yes. So there's 40 of those because they all replied all. And then there's the one who's like, reply all, can you take me off this list?
Damn it.
Really succinct subject line only. But this is cool. So a lot of the email programs, when you hit reply, if you don't know this, you can highlight certain parts. I mean, you hit reply, it'll just copy in that part. So you don't have to like go clean up yourself. Highlight the important part, hit reply, and boom, it quotes it for you.
Yeah, I've found
Or just type your reply
way.
In a subject and leave the body empty.
Oh, there you go. Or just no subject. No real. Yeah, that's what I don't like. So I go by subject line.
And here's another pet peeve about email. If you work for a company of a certain size, don't refer to everyone at my first name. Hey, can you help Bill out? Or John's having a problem, you know, or Mary's got this thing going
more,
on.
More than two of any particular name, then everyone, you should give their kind of full name at a company.
And you should say, hey, this is, you know, so-and-so, especially, you know, and here's another one. While we're on this.
Don't email me with problems.
Do not send email to me from a shared mailbox. So if you're in charge of accounts payable, right? So there's an accounts payable shared mailbox that everybody accesses, and so if you're not careful, you'll send email not as your own identity, but you'll send as the accounts payable mailbox. It's like, I need someone to come to my desk and look at my computer, and it's from accounts payable, and it might be, you know, they might sign it at the bottom. This is when a signature might come in handy, but they don't have a signature when they're sending from a shared mailbox. So, you know, say this is Bob, or say this is Bob Smith, or I'm on whatever floor. You know, just, okay, I'll come up with something later.
And one more thing.
And another thing.
My favorite subject line forward colon re colon nothing. That means there's like that. That means there's at least two or three emails that happened before it got to you.
Yes.
With no subject line.
No. That's and another thing. Don't include me in an email thread that's been going on for a month and say it. See below. Can you fix? So I cannot.
3 months.
Reading backwards through an email thread. This probably ties into what Flickit says, where if you applied in line, maybe it would make
more
sense.
If you apply in line. And the only thing about that, though, is that you end up where you're quoting people and you end up like, you know, 8 layers deep of quoting. And so sometimes that can get confusing.
Well, yes, and some people's email clients, some handle it better than others. I like the ones where it puts kind of the lines to show it's trying to show the indentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then you look at the mail, and on the left-hand side, there's like 20 different colored stripes to try and get you down to whatever,
yep,
wherever this thing started. And so, yeah. The highlighting thing, the problem for me is somebody will email me with a problem, and so or they're sending you a password or sending you some sort of information. So you've highlighted it and copied it, and then you're wanting to reply to say, "Yeah, I fixed this or whatever."
Yeah.
And on those, because you're talking about it's a 2-email deal, I want to include their request so that then there's not any, "Well, what did you fix?" or any mystery. And so, but so then you hit reply and it shows, just their password.
That's how I learned about that trick, was I did that. No, I don't know if I caught it or not, but yeah, I was like, where did the rest of the email go? It's because I copy pasted just a couple of credentials out or something like that. And really, don't email credentials, but right. 2, that will happen, yeah.
And so, so that happens to me way too often. Or it looks like, there's like the one sentence that you copied and pasted to do something with, and you reply only that. So it looks like that was the most, that's what you're concerned about or whatever with it. But, I can see why. Basically, it sounds like people below a certain age really don't use email.
Yeah, but that's not going to go away in the workplace, I don't think. I know there's more instant messaging things. Some shops run their own Jabber clients, and, Google's going the whole Hangouts way. But I don't think you're going to get away from email anytime soon. Just because it's quick communication, there's that trail. Because there are going to be some communications where you want that record of people.
Although somebody could come up with
things.
The thing that would replace email and give you some of the sort of power, if it could distinguish between, hey, what are you doing for lunch? Because that should just go away. That one, that's ephemeral. When you send it and it's like, hey, let's go to lunch, and he says, yeah, what time can you go? I mean, that whole lame conversation that you end up having in email where it's like, oh, well, I have a meeting until 12:45, so can we go at 1? Well, then the horrible, oh, and where should we go? You spent 20 emails to just get the time, and now the group has got to discuss. It's like ordering a pizza with indecisive people and a couple of picky ones to throw into the mix so that you have to, play like mind. You have to map out with the Venn diagrams so that you can order your pizza. But something that gets rid of that ephemeral stuff. I mean, you could text and message, but then there's the people who don't do – the old people who don't do that, and then the young people who are all – who won't email, and then Slack seems to be trying to do something in the middle. It should almost be where you can either by what the message is or by some way of how you choose to transmit it or whatever, that it tells the difference between something that's ephemeral, that after 30 days it can just go away, and stuff that you'd want to keep, like, oh, here's the new policy on blah, 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 or here's the answer to your question. Well, that might be something where you click and say, oh, this is very important. I want to keep it.
Bridging the generations is going to be hard. So I keep waiting for, Snapchat Enterprise, but I don't think there's going to be the adoption at the older generations.
Or the company, the company where all internal communication is by imager.
Yeah.
It's all memes. The new Star Trek will be where it's a race that communicates only by memes. They're apparently ruled by intelligent cats.
That's mostly a lot of DEF CON presentations are like that. 50% meme slides.
I think it's just Facebook.
It's all
That's what
memes.
It'll turn into.
I Well, see, there's something. Wait till what's going to happen when Facebook, while we're, I guess this is the bitchin' episode.
I got my own in studio Barker.
It's a new Star Wars sound effect. That's,
it's like
that's
a
what
squeaky
our lightsaber
Tesla is what that sounds like.
That's what our lightsaber sounds like. But, I don't know. So, what was I going to complain about?
Well,
I'm sure I'll
we ran out of
Facebook,
stuff here on Earth.
Facebook, maybe. Hey, here's a new service, a new startup service on Facebook. It can, for all, basically, it can like you tell it what your politics are. And then it'll just spew stupid memes that anybody who doesn't already agree with your politics isn't going to like or change their mind by the meme, but it's just going to fill their thread. And I basically you can go either – you can go any political stripe you like and do the – and it happens. So I just want to write an app where you can automatically do it so that then – so then you don't have that thing from your relative where you go – how much time did this person spend finding this meme and then getting it into Facebook so they could send it out to all of us so that we could somehow benefit from the information?
Well, I noticed,
I-troll.
I noticed that Foursquare kind of tracks you now if you leave it on. You know, there's a setting, I guess you could turn it off, but it kind of keeps track of where you've been. So you don't actually have to check into places. Like, it knows you were at these different places, you can see a history of where you've been. So I extrapolate that eventually there'll be an app or maybe just the NSA that will turn on the speaker or the microphone on your phone and just kind of record your day and maybe even, you know, a little x-ray through your pocket, and it'll update Facebook for you automatically. It'll say, wow, had a great conversation with Bob today. He told me a really funny joke.
Aside from the updating Facebook part, a lot of that's already out there. It's fairly trivial, and that's the scary part. It's fairly trivial to take over, like, the microphones, the cameras on smartphones, and a lot of people are kind of thinking that, you know, a lot of governments have already done that or have access to that if they want to.
Well, there was the old thing where they could turn on your phone in your, you know, when everybody had wired phone, landline phones, where they could turn on the... they could basically pick up the phone or
and
make
get
it
the mic out of the handset and listen to what was going on in the room.
And listen inside the room. They didn't have to put a bug in there. They just had to access the wiring that went to your house. We've gotten to the point where the technology blurs between like really badly, you know, ultimate spy technology and stuff that you could see people doing voluntarily on their own, turning on that. You know, they're the people who put they've put their own
body cam
on, and they keep track and it records all that stuff.
That's because they don't have anything to hide. I love that excuse.
Well, just civilians, so that's not part of their job. But on the other hand, there's the stuff that's going towards where, the use where it, when you meet somebody where, like with Google Glass or whatever, the idea where it would recognize the person and give you information about them so that you, you know, one thing.
Spoiler alert.
Don't talk about their foot.
I'm going to need that in my old age. It's going to say, this is your wife. You love her. Thank you. Hi, I love you, honey.
Like, don't talk about her foot. Like, what's about the foot? Oh, no.
It doesn't make her look fat. It's all...
don't look
gonna,
at his neck.
And then that's all you can do is
you're
like.
You're going to go to read your email and it's going to be like, you know what I hate? It's going to have a whole list.
Things I
forgot. I hate this email.
Reminder, hate this.
Oh, you made the glass list.
But, you know, the line between, oh, well, now it knows, now it has a list of all your known associates that can be picked up for surveillance versus actually helping somebody. I mean, you can get when you get older or whatever. Frankly, at the party, I could have used it for some because it's sort of like, you know, we see a lot more people at going to all the different geek gatherings. And so somebody that you saw at a geek gathering 4 or 5 years ago last.
Especially when they look different. You know, everyone's kind of a little bit of age.
It's hard to pick up what their name is. And I was doing shirts. And so it's kind of like, I want to be sure that I am getting your
order. Did you
mean
shots
correct.
Or shirts? Oh, you were doing shirts.
Pick up their shirt order. And it's kind of like, yeah, I want to know the name that ordered the shirt. Partly because that's securing it. But then they're like,
I was doing shots.
But anyway, So it, you know, it just it circles back around to how you, you know, that stuff needs to be secure. It should be privacy powered, where you get to control if it's divulged, which I think Apple's kind of on the right track. I think Google's done some of those things, but it sounds, you know, they all have. None of them is perfect. I would say each of these things, like when I point out Apple, you know, kudos to them on the on keeping on the privacy thing on that one front. There's plenty of places where they're leaking stuff, and same with Google and the rest. And you would just hope that they got to more of a commitment to it. And you'd also, you know, again, like email. I think email is fundamentally broken as a system. We're just lucky that emails are small enough and the data networks are big enough that they can take it. But I think it's the percentage of the volume of email that is not really intended, that's just that's spam, basically, to cut to the chase. It's more than
it's
half.
A huge, oh no, it's like 90%. Yeah, it's like 90%.
You kind of go, you know, if anything else, if your car, if somebody you didn't authorize was using 90% of the miles on your car, would you just, oh no, I'll put a special filter so I don't have to see it.
That's it. You know, email's going to go away, just like Usenet.
I could see where it could happen. It just goes down to the diehards or AOL.
No, I was just reading like an alt binaries post about that. That's cool.
Are you sure you weren't just looking at an alt binaries post about that?
I didn't mean to say dot binaries. I meant to say alt dot psi dot.
He only looks at the actual code. He never compiles the binaries.
I only read them for the headers. Yeah.
He never UU decodes them.
Well, I guess the last segment, and then we can go to. Then we can complain about science.
Science! My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious.
Science!
So,
A Back to the Future reference.
Aptical moment on today.
I made it special for
that. Was awesome that you planned that for today.
Well,
wow. You knew it was gonna be on Wednesday.
It was really awesome. Is that in the late 1980s when they made Back to the Future, that they made sure that it was on a night that Technology Bites would be on. The show hadn't even started. You know, the show was 10 years away. And no. Anyways, in science, this is cool. Zombie white dwarf star caught destroying an orbiting planet.
Did you say zombie Dwight?
Zombie Dwight Worf star caught destroying an orbiting cat.
Zombified child star.
That's no star. That's a moon station. Or whatever Star Wars reference.
Oh.
Space station?
More than 570 light years away in the constellation Virgo, a disintegrating planet orbits around a white dwarf, the leftovers of a yellow star after it died, which our sun, I think that's like the ultimate end to our sun would be a white dwarf. The cause of the planet's demise is the zombie star itself. The white dwarf is extremely dense, and its enormous gravitational pull is tearing the rock apart, creating an enormous cloud of dust and debris that follows the planet in its orbit. This dance of the dead was observed by NASA's Kepler spacecraft last year and is described today in the journal Nature. It's the first of its kind where they can see what happens. One of the things that they weren't sure of was if planets can actually orbit white dwarfs. Experts estimate that at least 15% of white dwarfs have planets or debris around them, but no one has ever observed a planet passing in front of this type of star before. So this could help strengthen the search for intact planets orbiting white dwarfs, which could drastically help the search for extraterrestrial life. Some astronomers think that Earth-like planets could be circling white dwarfs at just the right distance, where the temperature is ideal for water to pool and life to exist. Planets like this would be roughly the same size as the white dwarf they orbit, making them easy to see. They'd block out a ton of light when they passed in front of the star, allowing researchers to easily find them and study what's on their surface. And then the other one, this one's more sci-fi, and they haven't found one yet. You know, there's all kinds of stories about tunnels in space-time known as wormholes, used for time travel. How much fact lies within the fiction? The answer is more than you might think. Scientists are looking at ways to use traversable wormholes. Here's the important part, if they exist. that's kind of like, I want to use a DeLorean to travel through time, if a time-traveling DeLorean actually exists, to travel faster than the speed of light, and even to travel through time itself. A traversable wormhole is a hyperspace tunnel, also called a throat, for you kids at home, technical term, that connects together two remotely distant regions within our universe, or two different universes, if other universes exist. I love this article, in all or only this universe, or two different periods in time, as in time travel, or different dimensions of space, physicist Eric Davis told Space.com by email, or by phone in an alternate universe. Davis specializes in the field of space-time as a member of the Tau Zero Foundation, where he uses equations from Einstein's general theory of relativity to think about possible or impossible designs for traversable wormholes, warp drives, and time machines. Wormholes were first proposed in 1960 by mathematician Ludwig Flam, who was toying around with equations from Einstein's general theory of relativity that described how gravity can curve space-time, which refers to the fabric of physical reality. While these tunnels through space-time are a fascinating theoretical possibility, according to physicist Kip Thorne, professor emeritus at California Institute of Technology, scientists have not yet come up with an agreed-upon way that wormholes could form in nature, and no wormholes have ever been detected. So there's the key thing. You know, basically, with all the stuff we've looked around, we haven't seen any, and so it's a neat idea, but apparently to make a wormhole work, that even if it appeared, it would likely collapse before an object or a person could pass through it, and to keep it open long enough to traverse it would require some kind of scaffolding, but normal material wouldn't stand up to the job. You would have to have an exotic material like dark matter or dark energy.
So not like teak or some kind of a hardwood.
So essentially, this is all like, this is beyond unobtainium. It's like might not existium.
It's like dark buckyballs.
We're going to combine non-existium with unobtainium
if
in
exist.
Possible universes that may exist. And so obviously doing the math on these kinds of things can lead to interesting, you know, it does combine with figuring out how to build, warp-type drives and that kind of stuff. But it does seem like the usefulness of it in today's world is rather minimal.
The University of Delft published some stuff yesterday, so it's along these lines, but it was going against something that Einstein didn't like. So the theory of like the spooky entanglement, where you can have, an atom here, they could be, have another atom all the way across the universe, and by observing this one, it changes the other one. He was like, no, we haven't explained it yet, but that doesn't actually happen. He was kind of an opponent of it. But they did an experiment today that supposedly closes that whole loop on quantum entanglement and show that it really does work, and so that happens.
It was part of
it
is
it was a further proof.
Yeah,
they had
so it's faster than the speed of light.
They had done tests where they saw there was some kind of entanglement, but the things were too close together, I guess, to be positive that it wasn't some kind of switch that was like at the speed of or near the speed of light or something. But there was a recent experiment where they got the things far enough away, like they somehow entangled them and then got them far enough away that when they flipped it, it wouldn't have been able to do it. I read that a while back, but I don't remember much detail about it.
They actually published, and it looks like it stood up to a little bit of scrutiny, and they're moving forward with it. So they're sure of it enough to actually go ahead and announce to the rest of the world that, hey, we think we've gotten this. So there was the Bell inequality was what they were messing with before, and I think that's where things came into. So they've gotten around that in the explanation.
There's the real, mysterious stuff. You wonder, with
without
that,
the if it exists.
Yeah, really, in this or any other universe. but if they can get to where the kind of controlled, quantum entanglement, that seems like there's a way that you could then you could that's communication. You could
yeah, that's what that is. You can't get yourself from here to there, but that's instantaneous communication. It's like if you wanted to talk something on the moon, you wouldn't have to wait, you know, those few minutes, you know, for it to come back or a few seconds if the moon exists.
Of course in like galaxy sized communication, so like the Star Trek thing, it's like, you know, oh no, this supernova is coming at you, and in 2,000 years, because it's 2,000 light years away, it's going to blow right up on you.
And it kind of makes you wonder about like SETI and a lot of those things, where if we really do want to communicate with very far away civilizations, are they going to be beaming these really slow radio waves, or are they going to be using something more along the lines of this?
You have entanglement phones.
Yeah, but phone gets entangled.
Although if they have to be close together to entangle them in the first place, then you have to... It's kind of like...
Some that are already entangled, but I think there's a way to entangle two so that you know those two are entangled.
For sure.
But I think in the existing universe, search. There can be ones that are already entangled.
So it's
entangled.
Still just the physicist's equivalent of the cans with the string. Because you have to have them all close
together.
Except
it's a quantum string.
And then send the... Yeah, you don't... It's wireless...
I like your string theory.
String communication. Yeah, that's where string theory came from. Well, what's going to connect the cans when I'm talking to you?
We should just start doing a show of bunk pseudoscience, just with a lot of terminology.
Mythmakers.
The myth builders.
Mythmakers. There we go. Yeah, builders even better than play.
Builders.
So even in this article where they were talking about this, they actually there's always a security, you know, slant to everything, and they're saying this is actually one of those few mediums where you could have communications between two points without anyone being able to eavesdrop, and if they do eavesdrop, you can actually tell because it affects the communications between the two entangled particles, which is kind of cool.
Mystery science theater.
the spones.
You know,
reverse of Snopes.
They already found cold fusion a number of years ago.
It was on the internet, right?
And then Mr. Fusion was in the movie.
I'm applying my update to my Mac now. Here we go, rebooting.
So do we have any other like large dates looming that are going to be cool? I mean, we've gotten past, you know, it's been like a stream of, you know, kind of cool dates to look forward to, but now that we're post Back to the Future and we're post Skynet.
Sounds like a good Barrett time.
2036, 2034,
that's what I mean, nothing in the
media. Like that.
Nothing. Nothing
I don't
big,
know. In the general geekosphere, what is it? December 18th seems to loom large of this year.
Yeah, but that's not
Star
like
Wars
a.
Day.
That's a new thing.
Followed on the 19th by 50% of the geeks saying this is the worst Star Wars ever, and the other half saying, "Oh, it was great."
It's as if millions of internet users all cried
right
at once.
This sucks, or this rocks at the same time.
Did you see the boycott Star Wars 7?
Because it's not white enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on.
There are.
No spoilers, though.
Well, I mean, I've seen as much as you've seen. I'm spoiling Twitter for
well,
you.
Well, saying yeah, it's
apparently idiocy, the black stormtroopers gotten people upset, and they're I don't know if they're trolling or if they're I think some people are you know I think people who may have instigated it might have been trolling, but the people who responded were sincere. That they felt that, you know, the way that Star Wars portrays white people, black people, the black people are good, the white people are evil, and...
It's forced, basically,
and,
yeah,
and I, because if you saw in the trailer, now the light side of the Force is the bad one, right? Because the dark side, and the dark side is the good side, right?
How are we spoiling
and,
it?
And the, the Darth Vader knockoff guy is all in white, right? Oh, wait, no, he's in black. You know, you just kind of go... There's enough mix-up in the various color stuff.
The only thing I got
really
to say to those
the...
people is James Earl Jones.
Lando Calrissian. Yeah.
Jar Jar Binks.
He did betray before he redeemed himself. That's what they said. So.
Yeah, but then he got played by a white guy after that. Once he was redeemed, they dug up a white guy to be in the... To be the...
Actual body.
Yeah.
Anyway, that music tells us we need to really bail on this conversation. And we will. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming out last Saturday to the anniversary party. And we do have shirts. So if you're interested in shirts, contact us via the Facebook page, facebook.com/geekradio or geekradio.com using the contact page. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And
he's Groovehouse.
Many of you have been longtime listeners and supporters of KPFT. This station asks you to consider establishing a bequest in your will that benefits KPFT. Supporting KPFT with a legacy gift is an easy decision to make. The future growth and excellence of our station depends on our ability to also build a permanent base of support through an active and successful legacy gift program. The next time you meet with your advisors to review your estate or long-term financial plans, please remember you can include KPFT. Ensure your commitment to public broadcasting continues on. With the help of your attorney, a bequest is simple to put in place. If you need help or have questions, call our development director at 713-526-4000. Again, that's 713-526-4000. Please join listeners like you in helping to ensure that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
The organization Woman's Roots will be having a fundraising event at the YWCA on October 17th from 12 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. The address is 6309 Martin Luther King. You can help Woman's Roots continue its work in helping women who have been released from prison. The group's motto is Healing the Woman from the Inside Out. Thank you. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at KPFT Houston.